This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday outlined a $2.3 trillion plan to upgrade the nation's infrastructure over the next 8 years and what he billed as a once-in-a-generation investment in America. Biden's proposal would undo former President Trump's signature legislative achievement of giant tax cuts for corporations. Funding for the infrastructure projects would come from a hike in corporate taxes. Biden's plans will be followed in the coming weeks by a companion bill with investments in child care, family tax credits, and other domestic programs. French President Emmanuel Macron on Wednesday announced a three-week nationwide school closure beginning next Monday and a month-long domestic travel ban in an effort to slow a third wave of COVID-19 infecting his country. A rise in cases is crippling intensive care units in areas hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic. Macron had hoped to avoid the lockdown and the effect it would have on the economy. Macron also promised to speed up vaccinations by giving access to all people age 60 and over in mid-April, those 50 and over in mid-May, and the rest of the population a month later. German officials have decided to limit the use of AstraZeneca's coronavirus vaccine in people under 60 after more unusual blood clots were reported in a small number of people who received the shots. In response, the executive director of the European Medicines Agency, the agency in charge of the evaluation and supervision of medicinal products, said there is no evidence that would support restricting the use of the vaccine in any population. Via remote, this is VOA News. Pfizer announced Wednesday that its COVID-19 vaccine is safe and strongly protective in children as young as 12, a step toward possibly beginning shots in this age group before they head back to school in the fall. The Pfizer-BioNTech trial was of 2,260 adolescents aged 12 to 15, resulting in 100% efficacy in preventing COVID-19, according to a company statement. The vaccine was well tolerated with side effects in line with those seen in the earlier adult trial. Last week, the companies gave the first vaccine doses in a series of trials testing the vaccine in younger children that will eventually go to those as young as 6 months of age. Seven pro-democracy advocates were convicted in Hong Kong on Thursday for organizing and participating in unlawful assembly during massive anti-government protests back in 2019. The activists included media tycoon and founder of the Apple Daily tabloid, Jimmy Lai, who had already been held without bail on other charges related to his pro-democracy activities. The group were convicted for their involvement in a protest held in 2019. Organizers of the protest said that more than a million people marched that day in protests of a proposed bill that would have allowed criminal suspects to be extradited to mainland China for trial. The extradition bill was eventually withdrawn, but the protests expanded to include full democracy and other demands, and at times descended into violence between protesters and police. China has since taken a tougher stance, implementing a security law on Hong Kong and approving reforms that will reduce the public's role in voting and lawmakers for the city's legislature. The Chinese Communist Party government has frequently accused Lai of being an anti-China troublemaker. The UN Special Envoy for Myanmar warned Wednesday that a bloodbath is imminent and there is an increasing possibility of civil war in the country if civilian rule is not restored. The envoy, Christine Schreiner Bergener, urged the UN Security Council to consider all tools to take collective action to do the right thing for the people of Myanmar, according to a copy of her remarks obtained by VOA. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There's jubilation in Ivory Coast over the final acquittal of former President Laurent Gbagbo.
We are very happy here in Cote d'Ivoire and in the whole of Africa because Mr. Gbagbo has been completely acquitted and we are preparing his return to the country.
We'll have a report from Paris on the ICC decision. Niger's government says it thwarted an attempted coup d'etat. Nigeria's government explains President Buhari's latest medical trip abroad. Botswana extends a year-old state of emergency by 6 months. And angry protesters in Liberia torch the home of the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
What the people are asking for, they want justice, and they want it to be done quickly. But can you imagine the county attorney opened this to us that the boy will not be tried now until August 10th of court? And the angry crowd are saying no. If they allow it to happen, at the end of the day, there will be nothing that will come out of it.
And health experts fear measles vaccine shortage as the world ramps up production of COVID-19 vaccine. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The International Criminal Court, the ICC, on Wednesday delivered a much-awaited ruling on whether to uphold its earlier acquittal of former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo and youth leader Blaise Goudé, implicated in the 2010 post-electoral violence in Ivory Coast.
Former President Laurent Gbagbo and Charles Blaise Goudé were in the courtroom for the verdict. Blaise Goudé smiled widely as presiding judge Chili Eboué Ousoudji read it out.
The appeals chamber by majority has found no error that could have materially affected the decision of the trial chamber in relation to either of the prosecutor's two grounds of appeal. It therefore rejects the prosecutor's appeal and confirms the decision of the trial chamber.
The judge also revoked all remaining conditions on the men's release. Former President Gbagbo, who has been staying provisionally in Belgium, has said he wants to return to Ivory Coast, where he remains a heavyweight in the opposition against current President Alassane Ouattara. In a statement, Gbagbo's defense team hailed the acquittal, saying justice had been done. In 2019, ICC judges acquitted Gbagbo and Blaise Goudé over crimes against humanity charges related to a wave of post-electoral violence in Ivory Coast in 2010 and 2011. The vote saw Ouattara defeating Gbagbo, who refused to concede. Following an investigation of alleged atrocities that included perpetrating murder and rape, Gbagbo became the first former head of state to be arrested on orders of the ICC. The prosecution appealed the initial acquittal on procedural grounds, all of which were dismissed by the appeals judges, with two of them dissenting. In some cases, Judge Eboué Ousoudji offered particularly strong criticism of prosecutor Fatou Bensouda's arguments, including her apparent suggestions that the first court hadn't fully considered all the evidence before coming to its verdict.
Judges of the ICC are presumed to act with integrity and impartiality. The appeals chamber would expect evidence of a very clear nature to support such a serious allegation as was made.
Wednesday's ruling amounts to yet another setback for the ICC prosecution. Judges previously acquitted on appeal former Democratic Republic of Congo Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba. Prosecutor Bensouda earlier dropped crimes against humanities charges against Kenyan leader Uhuru Kenyatta. Bensouda is also under U.S. sanctions for launching an investigation into war crimes by U.S. troops in Afghanistan. However, champions of the 20-year-old ICC argue that its mission as a court of last resort, taking on extraordinarily difficult cases against powerful figures, is extremely challenging from the start. Bensouda's 9-year term is up in June. She will be succeeded by British prosecutor Karim Khan. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
in Ivory Coast. The supporters of former President Laurent Gbagbo say they are overjoyed by his complete acquittal yesterday at the International Criminal Court. Jean-Gervais Tchéidé, vice president of Mr. Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party, says the former president's supporters are preparing for his return to Ivory Coast.
We are very happy here in Côte d'Ivoire and in the whole of Africa because this trial took 8 years to come out. So we are preparing his return to the country.
Do you know when he is expected to return home?
That will be up to him to tell us. We know that last year in December, he wanted to come back to his country, but due to the fact that the 31st of March was the day of the appeal, he had decided to stay in Brussels and wait for the trial to finish. Now that everything is finished, now that the whole world knows that Mr. Gbagbo has never been guilty of any crime against humanity or a war crime or anything like that, now we will put together all the members of the party and prepare for the date of his return. It is he himself who is going to decide.
What do you make of the fact that the prosecutors have said that there were errors in the first trial, and now the court itself has come out to say they not prove the errors? Why do you think it took this long?
Well, it took that long time because for one reason. It is the same reason why Mr. Gbagbo has been taken to the ICC court there. It is just a way for the international community and for France especially to make sure that Mr. Gbagbo will not be in the country for 10 years.
You and I have spoken on many occasions about Mr. Gbagbo's trial, and you had said that his release was needed for national reconciliation. So what does this mean now for Ivory Coast, the fact that he has been set free?
Now, in terms of reconciliation, our position has not changed. We are very, very determined to conduct and to see that reconciliation come to a certain level. But reconciliation means that both sides, I mean the government side and our side, should come together, should agree on the necessity of this reconciliation. We know that reconciliation is necessary. Now, is it the case for the government, for the ruling party? I'm not so sure. But anyway, we know that if Mr. Gbagbo comes to Côte d'Ivoire, this will accelerate the reconciliation process. So it is in the interest of the country that he comes as soon as possible.
Jean-Gervais Tchéidé is the vice president of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan. Angry protesters in Maryland County, one of the 15 political subdivisions of Liberia, on Wednesday set on fire the home of House of Representatives Speaker Bopar Chambers, demanding justice from their government. As Rita Jalobwe reports from Monrovia, the protest by a motorcyclist began over the death of a motorcycle rider who protesters say was murdered for racialistic purposes.
Women from every part of Maryland County gathered Wednesday in Plibo City and marched a distance of about 80 miles towards Harper City, the county's capital, to demand justice from their government for an alleged ritualistic killing. They chanted slogans such as "We want justice" as they set ablaze the home of House of Representatives Speaker Bopar Chambers, who happens to hail from Plibo. Alex Davis, the head of the Motorcycle Riders Union in Maryland County, says Mudashus Yuma, a motorcyclist aged 23, was murdered by another motorcyclist, and that Yuma's body was discovered with some parts missing. He says the perpetrator was arrested by members of the community and turned over to the Liberia National Police in Harper City. But he says the trial of the culprit is being delayed.
We are asking our national government to swiftly come in and be able to try this particular fellow as soon as possible. Because since the guy was arrested and turned over to the police, they give us 48 hours. And from that time up to now, we're more than 48 hours and we're not getting anything.
Davis says ritualistic killings are common in Maryland County, and too often the culprits go unpunished. He says a statement by the county attorney regarding the trial of the alleged perpetrator sparked the violence.
What the people are asking for, they want justice, and they want it to be done quickly. But can you imagine the county attorney opened this to us that the boy will not be tried now until August 10th of court? And the angry crowd are saying no. If they allow it to happen, at the end of the day, there will be nothing that will come out of it.
Dauda Swari, the operation of police services in Harper City, says the perpetrator Moses Manama admitted to committing the alleged crime and was arrested by police and charged with murder.
When a man did it out, he came to one lady place to buy liquor, and the lady saw blood on him. And from that place, he started to blow alarm. And he was saying that who he killed. Secondly, he said he killed cow. So when the people following us to go shoot the cow, they could not find the cow that he allegedly said that he killed, but only to go and go shoot him up into them.
Swari says the culprit was in police detention awaiting trial when a group of protesting motorcyclists vandalized the precinct compound on Tuesday.
We have tried to negotiate, but they are not understanding. Violence is their posture. We tried talking with them from the day this thing started up to this time, but they are not like listening to us. They prefer being here with our police. That's how I observe it to be like.
Maryland County Superintendent George Proud, who was in Monrovia as of Wednesday, says he has been following the developments in his county. He says the county attorney could have handled the issue of the trial differently.
Yes, I listened to him, and after he said, I called him and said, even if it were true that the case would be put to August 10 or court, that information was not timely. When we were making every effort to calm the situation, we needed to tell them something that at least would appease them. And so actually, the statement didn't help.
Superintendent Proud says county authorities and their families are at risk as the protesters have threatened unspecified actions.
They have banned the Speaker House in Plebo, and they are planning now to move to Harper to get to my house. The police waiting for instructions, they're waiting for orders. They have been placed in one portion of the city of Plebo. We are at risk. Our people are at risk. Anything actually could happen.
Meanwhile, President George Weah Wednesday imposed a dusk-to-dawn curfew throughout Maryland County, promising that the death of the motorcyclist will be investigated. The president called on the protesters not to take the law into their own hands. Rita Jirabwe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 1st. Niger's government said Wednesday it foiled an attempted coup just days before newly elected President Mohamed Bazoum was expected to be sworn in. A government spokesperson said the government arrested several people while others were being pursued. Journalist Abdul Razak in the capital Niamey says the city was quiet Wednesday evening.
The situation on the ground, as the government itself said in the press release announcing this attempted coup d'etat, is, let's say, calm. People normally went about their business all the day, and nothing in the streets of the capital Niamey indicated that something abnormal is happening or has happened.
Abdul, who exactly did the president say was involved in this attempted coup?
President did not make any comment on this attempted coup d'etat, although he was this Wednesday morning at the place where the shots were heard last night. He went in this place for a performance ceremony for two members of the Constitutional Court. And the government also, in the press release announcing this attempted coup d'etat, did not give people arrested or rich who will be involved in this attempted coup.
This announcement is coming, Abdul, following this contested presidential runoff election. And we know that the president-elect is supposed to be sworn in. Exactly when is the ceremony supposed to take place? And what are the preparations being made for that?
The swearing-in ceremony of the president-elect is scheduled for Friday, April 2, and the preparations are proceeding normally. And this announcement of this attempted coup d'etat did not impact anymore this preparation. One of the organizers told us, he also told us that some delegations are already present here in Niamey.
We know that Niger has been attacked many times by Islamist militants. Also, there were protests following the February election. So is it possible there is a connection between the election and the Islamist attack in Niger?
President-elect Mohamed Bazoum recently, in interview with French media, declared that there was no link between the recent terrorist attacks and elections, nor have there yet been any claims of these attacks. To be able to get an idea of what motivated these repeated attacks since the beginning of the electoral process.
That was journalist Abdul Razak speaking with us in the Nigerian capital, Niamey. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is in London on what officials call a routine medical checkup, but critics say the president is on a medical trip abroad as medical doctors are threatening to go on strike over government's inability to meet their demands. Galba Shehu, senior special assistant to President Buhari on media and publicity, says the president is in excellent health.
I want to say to our numerous listeners that President Muhammadu Buhari enjoys a comparatively excellent health compared to his age mates. He traveled to the UK for routine medical examination. There was absolutely no urgency or any indication of any illness with him at the time he left us. This checkup is routine. He has done it every year. He didn't do it in 2020 because of the restrictions on international travel imposed by the COVID epidemic.
How long do you think the president is expected to stay in London? Because the last time he went to London, it took a while.
He has taken 2 weeks vacation, taking advantage of the window provided by the Easter holidays in this country. Friday is Good Friday, national holiday. Monday is Easter Monday. So he's taken advantage of that to do the medical examination. And he is expected back in the country at the end of the second week of April.
There are some who say, why is it that the president did not name a caretaker person while he's away? Is he going to continue running the country while he's in London undergoing medical checkup?
The Constitution of Nigeria states clearly that a president or governor will be away for upwards of 3 weeks. Then he's mandated to hand over the reins of governance. In this case, President Muhammadu Buhari is certainly spending less than 3 weeks. And so that requirement does not apply in this case.
Of course, Shehu, you know, every time this medical trip comes up, some Nigerians are saying, why is it that President Buhari or any Nigerian president cannot go do a medical checkup in Nigeria? And also they argue President Buhari is making the trip when doctors in Nigeria are threatening strike.
As for the doctor's strike that you mentioned, the two are not linked in any way. I think that if a record is to be taken, assessment made, Nigeria will count among the countries with perhaps some of the most restless medical unions that you can ever find anywhere. Hardly do you have a month or two without one union in the health sector or the other down in tools. So it's become part of our life.
Galba Shehu is the senior special assistant to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari on media and publicity. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. Botswana on Wednesday extended a year-old state of emergency by 6 months to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Opposition parties and labor unions opposed the move, arguing that infections keep going up while the economy is being crippled. Nkundise Dube reports from Habaruni.
Botswana has recorded just under 40,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus and 568 deaths, lower numbers compared to many other countries. But the majority of deaths have taken place since January 1 of this year. February was the deadliest month so far with 193. President Mokgweetsi Masisi now says it is necessary for the Southern African country to remain under a state of emergency for the next 6 months, but lawmakers have yet to decide. The state of emergency was declared in April 2020 to fight the spread of COVID-19. The declaration has prevented job losses, helped impose curfews and restrict the sale of alcohol, Masisi says.
These achievements would not have been realized without the introduction of the state of public emergency, because the provisions of our Public Health Act cannot adequately enforce the above regulations. In the absence of the state of emergency, it should be noted that all other actions limiting the rights of movement of people were likely to be found unconstitutional.
Masisi says with the country experiencing a surge in COVID-19 cases, a state of emergency remains the only viable option to blunt the pandemic.
I submit for your consideration, by honorable members, my request to extend the state of public emergency by 6 months in accordance with Section 17 of the Constitution of the Republic of Botswana from the 1st of April to 30th September 2021. During the same period, a curfew will be in place from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m.
But the leader of the opposition in Parliament, Dumelang Seleshando, told lawmakers there have been massive job losses under the state of emergency. He said other countries like neighboring Namibia were managing to keep infections low without resorting to such a measure. The number of people who died from COVID-19 in Botswana exceeds those in Namibia, yet they do not have a state of emergency in place. Let us not mislead people and say we can only fight the pandemic through the state of emergency. Public sector unions also say the state of emergency has failed to serve its purpose. The unions, through a joint statement, want to see reforms if the extension is granted. However, Parliament is expected to approve the extension Thursday night. President Masisi's ruling, the Botswana Democratic Party, BDP, has an overwhelming majority in the National Assembly. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
World Health Organization experts fear that the race to produce large quantities of COVID-19 vaccine could cut into the supply of global measles vaccines. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Critical topics relating to immunization globally were discussed during a regular meeting last week by the Strategic Advisory Group of Experts known as SAGE. Recommendations were made regarding the status of Ebola vaccines, as well as an oral polio vaccine and COVID-19 vaccines undergoing evaluation. During this review, SAGE Chair Alejandro Cravioto said the experts raised concerns regarding the situation of vaccinations against measles and rubella.
We're deeply worried that this has been stalled because of the COVID situation, and we fear that if this is not properly looked at by each one of the countries that has not been able to vaccinate the children so far, we will be having problems with outbreaks of especially measles. That is something that worries everybody and that we saw happening in 2019 in a very serious way.
Measles surged worldwide in 2019, reaching the highest number since 1996. Nearly 900,000 measles cases were reported, claiming more than 207,000 child lives, most in developing countries. Director of the WHO's Department of Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals, Kate O'Brien, says she does not expect shortages of measles vaccine right now. However, she warns that could change because of the intense pressure to increase the manufacturing capacity of COVID-19 vaccine.
As that ramps up, we have to continue watching this really carefully. We are starting to see the supply chain start to shrink to some degree, so that the amount of vaccine in the supply chain is narrowing, but we don't see in those analyses that that would lead to shortages anywhere at this point, but a very important area to continue watching carefully.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's it for this Thursday, April 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotte and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butt in Washington saying, have a great day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up on the program, crisis at the U.S. southern border. We'll talk with an expert on Central America and a U.S. immigration expert about President Biden's two-pronged approach to stemming the flow of migrants from the Northern Triangle countries. That's Encounter, next Saturday and Sunday.